Hello and a warm welcome to the Sweet Spot, your go-to golf tipping show brought to you by The Racing Post. It's Jack Reeve and it's Steve Palmer to look back on three tournaments and to preview one this week. Steve Palmer in good autumnal form, so hoping that continues at the Qatar Masters this week. Steve, how are you faring?
Well, yeah, we were on a good little run, as you alluded to there. But last week, nothing went our way. It was a real test of character last week. Lots of teasers, as I like to call them.
Based off of one week, Steve. I mean, you're taking the season as a whole, and you've been in good form.
But lots of teasers with no satisfaction. They're the worst weeks. I'd almost prefer them all to miss the cut, and you can just move on to other things in your life over the weekend, can't you? But there was a few that were teasing us rotten on the weekend, but no joy. But we move on to Qatar.
Yeah, we'll start with the Zozo. It was a very strange tournament, Steve, wasn't it? Because, it was fairly sort of evenly contested all week. And then Colin Morikawa just absolutely ran away with it. Good to see him back in the winner's enclosure.
Yeah, I'm sure lots of people would have backed him last week. He was 11-1. It was a bitter pill to swallow for those that didn't take that 11-1, because we talked last week, you may remember, about how important iron play is at Narashino. You had Tiger Woods winning there with a supreme iron play performance. Yeah, the best iron player that's ever lived. Hideki Matsuyama is one of the best modern day iron players we've got. It was quite clear that you want to be supporting the best iron players in that field. And, Morikawa, I don't think anyone would argue is the best iron player in that lineup last week. So I have been beating myself up quite significantly. We were all over him for the Zozo in 2021. He finished seventh. And I always consider him strongly for Narashino. But the victory drought, I don't know how you felt about his victory drought. I think it was becoming a thing, wasn't it,
Jeff? Oh, absolutely. I don't think it's, I don't think many people would have questioned why you didn't select him last week. I mean, it's been a long while since he won. And that would have been in the back of his mind as well.
Yeah, exactly. I think, as soon as it gets in their mind and it becomes a thing, that's when it puts me off. And that was a two-year victory drought. And it was spoken about a lot in media conferences. And I just thought I can't back him at a short price there in case he gets a high-class player against him. But he was just so fortunate on the Sunday, going into Sunday's final round. He had three players ahead of him, but they're all PGA Tour maidens. You had Justin Suh, Eric Cole and Bo Hostler. And they all three of them made nervous starts. Morikawa, very quick out of the blocks and playing like the two-time major champion that he is. We talk about this two-year victory drought and his confidence definitely was dented a little bit by it. But you've got to remember how good he was in 2021. And, he's won the Open. He's won the USPGA. So, he was looking like the old Morikawa on the weekend, particularly with iron play. I mean, his iron play is fantastic. His putting was good. Very rarely do you see Morikawa putt as well as that. Mm. He hardly hit a fairway, Jack. I mean, he's very wild off the tee, but it didn't matter because he was so good in other departments. But quite fortunate way that the leading ball worked on Sunday. But all credit to him. He's back now, isn't he? It's a monkey off the back.
Absolutely. Was it the putting that got him over the line? Is that what's been letting him down in the past couple of years?
Yeah. His putting is traditionally very poor, isn't it? And his iron play is always exceptional, and it was last week. But he said he found something on the putting green. They always say that, don't they? Why didn't you find it months ago? There he is. He said he found something on the putting green. God knows what it was. But he putted really well last week, and it was game over. And the opposite was true of Sung Jae-im and Cameron Davis. I mean, they both finished 12th. This is what I'm on about, teasing. I play eight places on me each way, but teasy, 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 teasy. And the timings as well, Jack. I mean, sorry to be so downbeat about the Zozo, but it's just an instant hitting it. You wake up in the morning. I always wake up really early because my children are so young. So I catch a bit of the coverage. But for most people, you wake up and you look at the scores and it's boom, isn't it? And at the age I am now, Jack, I like to ease myself into the day. I can't handle these instant hits.
I agree, Steve. I think, the first thing I was doing was checking the leaderboard. And I wouldn't say it was a gut punch waking up and seeing Sung Jae score every morning. But, there was some goodness in there. And then you just see a double out of nowhere and you go, needing two cups of coffee instead of one first thing just to get you in the swing of things, aren't you?
You're absolutely right. I can't remember what day it was, maybe the Friday or the Saturday morning. It was always a blur when they're playing in a far-flung location. And I woke up and Sung Jae was one shot behind the lead, and I was really, really content. And then I went off to do a little bit of parenting, came back and he's had a horrific finish and he's like four shots behind. And but I prefer the tournaments that are closer to our time zone for obvious reasons.
Absolutely. Any other standout performances that will be going into your tracker from the Zozo?
I think it would be remiss of us not to mention Rao Ishikawa, who used to be one of my absolute favourites. Do you remember him? You might be too young for knowing the Bashful Prince. When he first came onto the scene, he was an absolute prodigy. He was brilliant as a teenager, and he was known as the Bashful Prince because he didn't like the limelight too much. But I put him on the golf course, and he was amazing. And I thought he was going to be a world number one. I was certain that Rao Ishikawa would become world number one. He got up to world number 29.
Pretty good going.
But a lot of these prodigies, it all goes wrong early doors. If you try and turn a young lad into a professional golfer in their teens and you achieve it, then they sort of get to their 20s and they start thinking, what have I missed out on? They start questioning whether that was the right route. And then he went off the rails a bit in his 20s, and now he's 32 and he's looking good again. He's looking like the Bashful Prince.
You don't really see many young kind of golfers up and coming that just completely go off the rails now, do you? I think it'd be more fun if, you know, you had a few that just went completely wild after a few DP World Tour wins.
Yeah. Well, I get why the Bashful Prince wondered whether there's more out there. If you've just been, you know, cloned into this perfect golfer at a very young age and you haven't seen all the other things going on in the world, you know there's lots out there, isn't there?
And
So I understand what went wrong with the Bashful Prince. Maybe he's got it all out of his system now. Yeah. And at the age of 32, he's going to push on again because he's been playing well the last few weeks. I just want to say how excited I am to see the Bashful Prince back in my life.
Good. Good to see you smiling again, Steve, because I did feel you were slightly downbeat coming into this week.
Yeah, I am.
Should we head over to Andalusia, where there was you do look at the winners, don't you, sometimes, and go, oh, I could have backed him. And Adrian Maronk is one. I know how much you love Adrian Maronk. We've chatted about him so much on the Sweet Spot. Yeah. And he got it done in Andalusia and just turning into a real top draw player.
You're absolutely right. I mean, I didn't beat myself up over this one. I beat myself up over Colin Morikawa I've only just finished. But Adrian Maronk was 20-1. I mean, there would be punters out there, you know, put it in the comments section. There's bound to be a punter that had the Morikawa Maronk double. Somebody would have had the Morikawa Maronk double. I'm certain of that because, yeah, they were both very, very gettable. It's got a lovely ring to it, the M&M. We went for bigger prices in Andalusia, and the teasers were Daniel Hillier. He was going great guns at one stage. Marcus Helikilde was teasing away. Yeah, yeah. He was teasing, wasn't he? How we didn't get a place last week, I never know. But yeah, Little Maronki, as we like to call him on Sweet Spot. Little Maronki is third in the Race to Dubai standings now. I mean, you know, he could get over this Ryder Cup heartache in spectacular fashion by winning the Race to Dubai. I mean, he's put himself in the mix. He's going to need a strong finish. But I mean, yeah, I was delighted with that, with my non-punting hat on, which is very rarely the case.
It's good to put that hat on occasionally, though.
Yeah, let's put that hat on.
Yeah, just for wider context, because not everyone's, you know,
Let's put this hat on. This is a Rory McIlroy. Rory McIlroy's first victory. He signed that his first victory. Look at that. That's probably worth a few quid. Don't even fit me.
Your head has grown somewhat since you last wore it.
It's got dead spiders on it as well, because I keep it up there. Let's get all the dead spiders off my head. But yeah, that is my non-punting cap, let's say. And I was delighted for Adrian Maronk as a human story, because how bad must he have felt watching that Ryder Cup? You know, he should have been on that Ryder Cup team, arguably. He should have been picked. There was Nikolai Hoggard, perhaps a bit lucky to get on the team. You know, I didn't want Sepp Straka on the team, but maybe I was wrong. But Little Maronki would have been devastated to have missed that. That could be his only chance to get on the Ryder Cup team. I don't know. And a human reaction to that would have been, oh, I hate golf. I'm just going to go and lie down and forget about golf. But he's a stronger character than me. Yeah, my reaction would have been, go and lick my wounds for the rest of the year. He's come back, knuckled down. You know, he turned up for the Dunhill Links the week after the Ryder Cup. I was thinking, you poor sod, having to go into that locker room, seeing them all singing their songs and all excited about being on Team Europe. There was a few there, wasn't there? Yeah. And he's got to wander around going, oh, hi, well played. Yes, yeah, I watched it on the telly. The poor sod, and what a reaction. What a reaction, because You know, he played great last week, and look where he's won. He's winning everywhere, isn't he? Ireland, Australia, Italy, Spain. You know, the pride of Poland can just go anywhere and win trophies now. And he's only 30, so if you're watching Adrian, you know, your Ryder Cup dream could come true at some stage. He's only 30. Oh,
still a load of time, hasn't it? We haven't, yeah. I haven't heard from you, Steve, recently on the fortunes of your Polish village friend.
It all went horribly wrong. I think one of them may have strayed, shall we say, and then he departed. And then the other one, I don't know whether it was through sort of the heartache of being in the house alone, I don't know, but he's departed. So my Polish neighbours have both gone now.
Do you think that the good fortune of Adrian Mirok might lure them back? Or?
Oh, I don't know. But, you know, love's such a sort of, love stories can go wrong in a flash, can't they? they look such a happy couple. Bouncing along, walking their little, they had a little doggy, and they looked like they were there forever, but neither of them are there now. So, but hopefully Adrian Mirok's providing some comfort, because my word, if you're Polish, you should be taking an enormous amount of pride from Adrian Mirok's character more than anything else.
Absolutely. Well, your Polish couple can maybe learn a thing or two from Adrian. From the highs of Andalusia to the lows of Liv, Steve. I mean, I'm really trying to get myself into Liv, because I know, I'm the presenter of the Sweet Spot now, and I should be across all of this stuff. But I just can't. I mean, I watch it. I mean, I think Eddie Pepperell summed it up quite well on Twitter. And it just said, I'm trying to get into this, but I'm feeling nothing. The only thing I felt in, watching Liv Miami was just disgust listening to Paul Casey. Again, another blow. I'm really struggling to like. I don't like disliking people. And that's the easy way out, isn't it? Disliking someone. But there's something about Paul Casey which makes me feel icky.
Yeah, I think you've got every right to feel icky. He makes me feel icky. I mean, the whole thing makes me feel icky when Paul Casey starts talking without admitting at the start of his interview how lucky he is, because he has played rubbish for months now, and every week he's picking up these enormous checks from being part of the Crushers team, just feeding off the back of Bryson DeChambeau. So Bryson DeChambeau is playing amazing, therefore the Crushers keep winning these things, and they won the Team Golf Miami last week, of course. And Casey's banked, I think he banked about 1.4 mil last week, for what? For playing rubbish. You know, the heroes for Crushers last week were Bryson DeChambeau and Anirban Lahiri. So they should have come on all happy and cocky. Well, yeah, but Bryson typically does. Anirban's a lovely fella. But
to be fair to Bryson, he just seemed to have mellowed out somewhat over the past year. I've started to dislike Casey more, and I think that dislike has turned sort of admiration for Bryson.
He does seem to have
chilled out a bit.
I think that's fair comment. When people go through bad experiences, they come out the other side better people, don't they, typically? And Bryson lost his dad, and he was heartbroken about that. And he's obviously come under a lot of fire about various things he said. When they get him talking about sort of political stuff, he typically gets it horribly wrong, doesn't he? It's just not his domain, and he came under fire for that. I think he's a more sensitive soul than we give him credit for, actually. Mm. I saw an interview the other day about... apparently one of the main reasons, apart from the main reason, which is obviously all the dollar, one of the main reasons that he left the PGA Tour to go to Liv was because he kept trying to get on the Players Advisory Council of the PGA Tour, where you get voted on by your peers. He wanted to be on that committee, which it doesn't have a lot of power. It's just a sort of token thing, really. But he wanted to be on it, and he never got voted on. So basically, he knew that all his peers didn't like him, didn't want him to represent them, didn't care what he thought about anything. And apparently the thing he loves most about Liv is like being on that team, being with people that seem to genuinely like him and having that camaraderie. So I think behind all the muscles and the bravado, he's a sensitive soul who just wanted some friends as well as all the dollar. I'm not as naive enough to think that don't come into it, but I think it was a factor of why he left the PGA Tour, because he knew he wasn't well liked on that circuit. I think Bryson's all right. I think Paul Casey needs to sort of hold his hands up and say, look, yeah, I'm playing rubbish and I'm earning fortunes, and that can't be right.
I think that was a very good assessment of Bryson, Steve. You've looked within his soul and I think found the reason. There's often those sort of kids at school, aren't they? Sort of the threatening nerds who you're nasty to because you're worried they'll overtake you in whatever.
Yeah, Yeah, well, I have this, you're absolutely right. I have this discussion with my wife a lot because obviously we've got two young kids there at school. And then, yeah, my instant reaction has always been when my kids are like getting punched or something or bullied or, it hasn't happened yet, but there have been scenarios where I've been really angry with other kids. And, I'm on that end of the spectrum where I just want to get the kid that's annoying my child and go really angry at them. But then my wife sort of calms me down by saying, you know, why is that kid behaving like that? You know, what's gone wrong with him? You know, and she's very, very sympathetic towards them. So I think, when we see Bryson, when he first came onto the scene, he was just an annoying ass, wasn't he? He was just such an annoying ass. But, you know, what's made him an annoying ass? You know, would we have become an annoying ass if we had gone through the same life experiences that he's had?
Well, this is brilliant stuff. I think we're really growing as people, Steve, aren't we?
Well, we only got one golf tournament this week, so we can get away with a bit of psychoanalysis.
We haven't really talked about the Crushers won it.
The Crushers won it, and you've got every right to have not really enjoyed it. I didn't enjoy it. I've been desperately trying to get into LIV Golf because I see, you know, each way treble opportunities every week. You know, I love the idea of trebles because the rewards can be so high. I've really tried my hardest to get a handle on LIV Golf and to tip winners on LIV Golf, and we haven't had many. And I think one of the main reasons is the motivation issue is so hard to get a handle on because these players are rewarded for not just mediocrity, they're rewarded for completely rubbish golf. I mean, there's a Q school coming up soon for LIV. They're going to be two spaces available, I think, to get onto the LIV circuit. They're having a Q school. And you think about it, it doesn't sound much, but it's a massive tournament because if you qualify to go on the LIV tour, it's basically a $2 million prize money you've won instantly, because if you finish last in the LIV event, you get 120 grand. So you could finish last in every LIV event next season and you'll make $2 million. Make $2 million. And so there's some motivation when you get these players. It's very hard to judge who's going to be motivated because they know they're going to make a load of money, whatever happens. And it's three rounds as well, which is tricky. My hair.
I was about to say, Steve, I mean, is it time to change your hat? Should we move on to this week's do you want to get your hunting cap?
Talking about the crushers. This is crushing my head, actually.
It does seem quite
because it's so small. But yeah, just to conclude on that, the Crushers won. We were right to follow the seeds. The four teams that qualified for the final round were the four seeds. We went for the wrong seed. We went for Torque. They finished third. Strange event. DeChambeau and Lahiri could give themselves real pats on the back, fully deserve their silverware. Paul Casey and Charles Howell played poorly. Didn't matter. Get the same amount of money.
Joy of team events, isn't it? Right, let's look at this week's tournament, the Qatar Masters on the DP World Tour, played at Doha Golf Club. Steve, talk us through what we can expect here.
Yes, Doha Golf Club in Qatar is now 7,466 yards, par 72, four par fives. It's been the traditional home of the Qatar Masters from the inaugural edition in 1998. Hosted every year until 2020. Then we went off to Education City Golf Club for 2 years. And then last year we went back to Doha. And last year's event was in March. We must note that this tournament has always been staged in either January, February or March. This is the first time we branched into October. Last year's Qatar Masters, you may remember, a very windy affair. Ewan Ferguson emerged for very, very tight bunch leaderboard. High score, whatever you want to call it. I'm never sure myself. 7 under par total was the winning total. So this is a very exposed desert track. The weather is important. It looks like it's going to be sunny and relatively calm this week. So I think it's big hitters can make merry this week.
Any reason for the change in time of year it's played or?
No, I think we'll get a pretty similar test. But last year was just from round middle of round two onwards, really severe wind. This year, I don't think we're going to get any severe wind. Okay. 132 runners going to post.
Okay, great stuff. Let's take a look at the top of the market. Aaron Rye is your favourite, 20s. Thorbjørn Olesen, 20s. Jordan Smith, same price. Rasmus Højgaard, 22-1. Alexander Bjork, 22s. Yannick Paul, 28s. Ategi, 28s. Bigger the rest. Steve, a fairly competitive top of the market here. How many selections for your good self?
We've got five selections. Okay. And yeah, yes, we've only got one tournament, so we can get our state money all on the Qatar Masters. And it naturally fell into my lap this week with five selections. Normally, when I'm whittling it down from the long list to the short list, I have sort of 10 or 15 on the short list, and it's a laborious process. This week, just five names. I've got no interest in backing anyone else, so I won't be beating myself up if anyone else wins. Won't be any repeats of the Zozo.
Oh, I like the sound of that. Who is your main tip?
It is Thorbjørn Thunderbear Olesen, 20 to 1. When in need, when in peril, when you need a hero, call for Thunderbear. He will save every one of us. He delivered for us in the Thailand Classic, you may remember, in February. A four-shot victory there. He cruised to his seventh DP World Tour title. Going off a similar price this week, I think we get the same result. He's looked in great nick lately. 10th in the French Open, 17th in the Spanish Open, then 9th in the Andalusia Masters last week. He opened with a 73 last week to get left behind and then played beautifully over the final three rounds. Thunderbear, a proven desert rat. Second in the 2013 Abu Dhabi Championship. Third in the 2013 Dubai Desert Classic. Third in the 2014 Qatar Masters at Doha. Fifth in the 2014 Dubai Desert Classic. Second in the 2016 Qatar Masters at Doha. Fourth, fast forward to this year because I'm running out of puff. Fourth in the Ras Al Khaimah Championship in February, just gone. Yeah, I could go on and on and on and on and on. Olesen loves playing these Middle East courses. You know, they're all pretty similar. Yeah. Exposed Middle East tracks is right up his street. He finished 12th last year in the wind, which is not particularly well suited to that because his strengths are iron play and putting. I think he's going to find more fairways this year, and I think he's going to pepper pins, and he's going to hold putts, and he's going to win by off the track.
I know you're a big fan of him, Steve, but considering the form you've just read out there, really impressive. He feels like he goes under the radar somewhat.
He does. I mean, Bruce used to call him the flatterer, but I think Bruce's frustrations came from where I was tipping him so much because I've always been a big fan. And, obviously, if you're on a player loads of times, he's going to upset you more often than delight you. I wouldn't call him a flatterer. I mean, he's only 33 and he's won seven times. He's only 33. He's won seven times. He's obviously had a little off course wobble where he was off the radar for a bit, and here we are. And I think he's another one that would have been a bit like Maronki, little Maronki. He would have been thinking, oh, I could have done a job on the Ryder Cup. Yeah, particularly when you could say the most controversial selection for that Ryder Cup team was a Dane, Nicolai Hoggar. I sensed actually that Thorbjørn was a bit peed off, if I may use that term, because. While a lot of the Europeans were tweeting in the aftermath or during the Ryder Cup about how great it was, blah, 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 it was a bit of silence from Thorbjørn. He didn't really get involved in that. And I just wondered whether he had a bit of a chip on his shoulder about not being even in the conversation. I mean, I tried to get him in the conversation and was poo-pooed. I think he should have been closer to selection than perhaps he was, but that's by the by.
I don't mind your, sporting stars having a bit of a chip on their shoulder. I think that's a good thing sometimes. Maybe not in life, but when you're in the sporting arena of the Qatar Masters, I think that can be helpful.
I think you're absolutely right. And if Adrian Maronk has played so well last week because he's got a chip on his shoulder, then we should all be putting chips on our shoulder, shouldn't we?
Absolutely. Right. Thorbjørn Olesen, top tip for Steve Palmer in the Qatar Masters. Four more to go. Who's the next?
Robert McIntyre, 30 to 1. Who I now feel qualified to call Bobby McIntyre. We're finally going to make that transition now to Bobby McIntyre because I feel like I know him better than I did before now, because we watched him in the Ryder Cup. We've watched him on the team bus singing the Proclaimers songs. I feel like I'm qualified to call him Bobby McIntyre now. Yeah, this is a man who targeted Ryder Cup qualification, played every DP World Tour event that he could muster, probably campaigning for them to organise more DP World Tour events so he could get more points. He was entirely focused on making the Ryder Cup, and it's so heartwarming to see him achieve that goal and then for it to go so well. And normally this lad, I don't back this fella much because he's so popular. Yeah, he's a Scottish hero that the bookies know that they can chalk up anything and he'll still have his backers. But this week I felt like he's not being underrated in the betting. The opposite of anything. He opened up at 33 to 1 yesterday. He's the highest ranked player in this field. I think those odds are generous. And I think the generous odds are coming because post Ryder Cup, he's played a couple of times and he's been very well supported. Dunhill Links, Andalusia Masters, finished 25th in the Dunhill, 26th in Andalusia. I think he had a bit of a Ryder Cup hangover. But and the layers cleaned up, and I think they think, oh, let's have another go at that, because the prices are generous this week. But the dust has settled for me now in the Ryder Cup. It's almost a month ago, I think Bobby Matt's got his head screwed on again, chasing individual titles. And, you know, what a confidence boost that must have been, Jack. I mean, he went unbeaten through three matches. Yeah. He beat the US Open champion in the singles, and it mattered. It's not like it didn't matter. At one stage, all focus on Bobby McIntyre's match, because it was coming down to that at one stage. I think he's gained so much self-belief in the Marco Simone. I think the next time he's going down the stretch with a title on the line, he's going to find it a breeze. There's nothing harder than Ryder Cup pressure. Now I think on Sunday he's going to be in contention, and I think he's going to handle it well. And as for Doha, he's finished 31st there in his only previous visit. That was in 2019. He was world number 246. Now he's returning as world number 57. And can I just spread a little bit of icing? I know.
We like our icing, don't we?
We like our cakes. Rightly so. He's got huge motivation because a PGA Tour card is being dangled in front of him, because the top 10 on the Race to Dubai at the end of this season, first time ever this is happened, will get PGA Tour cards. So it's part of the strategic alliance. So McIntyre knows, bit of solid golf from now to the end of the season. He's got a PGA Tour card, which he's been chasing for ages. So if he wins this week, that's in the bag. And last bit of icing. Was that icing? He won in Q8 on the MENA Tour in 2017. He's got a great record in Middle East on DP World Tour, but he won on the MENA Tour in 2017 in Q8, which is not far from here.
I was somewhat distracted, Stephen, when you were discussing Kate. My mind went to Bake Off. Are you a fan of Great Britain?
Bake Off. No, I'm not. I don't watch that. I know my wife enjoys it. Didn't it have a controversial switch from BBC to Channel 4?
It was a few years ago, wasn't it? I've got a couple of friends who say when it's biscuit week, they'll both buy a pack of different biscuits. Or when it's cake week, select some cakes to eat while they're watching. I'm just thinking, could we do something similar for golf, like for the Zozo? Could we get something to just entertain us somewhat more when we're watching it in the early hours? I don't know. One for the comment section, maybe.
Yeah, I don't think we need any excuse to eat biscuits and cakes. Yeah, let's do it. I'm up for that. Perhaps the region that the tournament's being played in. So is there such thing as a Japanese biscuit?
There's lots of Asian sort of supermarkets popping up around here, and they're excellent. You go in there, I mean, it's being there for hours just looking around.
I must admit, I'm not sure what biscuits they eat in Qatar, but that's what the comment section is there for, specifically. Exactly. That sort of thing.
Educational reasons.
And yeah, educate us on that. We must have some viewers in Qatar, must we?
Sorry?
Have we got viewers in Qatar? We must have.
I'm sure we do, yeah.
You're one of these whiz kids who can look at all the things and see where all the viewers are from, aren't you? I don't have the ability to do that, but I remember you telling me once we had viewers in Norway and all sorts of places.
Yeah.
So you check that out and see whether we've got any. I'd love to have some viewers in Qatar. I hope you're all well.
Oh, I'm sure they are. Two tips down, three to go. Who's the next?
Three to go. We were worried that with one tournament, we wouldn't have much content. We're going to
you know, when you get a thought, an intrusive thought, and it kind of, you can't override it. It happens to me sometimes.
Be the longest podcast we've ever done. The third selection, he's been tickled out. He opened at 40 to 1. I was very excited. I'm still quite excited about 33 to 1. And it's Mathieu Pavon, who made his DP World Tour breakthrough in the Spanish Open the week before last. Hugely impressive front running performance. I mean, he faltered in the past when in contention, but that was an incredible form. You had John Rahm had got out the gates, and Pavon must have looked at Liverpool and thought, oh my God, here we go again. Because he finished runner up to Rahm in that tournament previous year, but he just blew the field away. And at the age of 30, it seems like he's now got the minerals to go with his talent. We always knew he had talent. I think it was Eddie Pepperell who played with him once. We mentioned Eddie Pepperell. I think he played with Eddie Pepperell, and Eddie says he's the best player I've ever seen or something.
Really?
I'm pretty sure that's just popped into my head. But we all knew that Pavon was really, really talented. Might be Tommy Fleetwood that said that. I'm not sure. One of those two. But he's now proved himself mentally for me. And I could easily see a quick fire follow up on Sunday. Last week, understandably, away with the fairies in round one, he was really emotional after that victory. You know, another man would have taken monkeys off bat. He opened with a 74 in Andalusia, so miles behind. But then from Friday onwards, swinging superbly again, 67, 68, 69, tied ninth. He was sixth in the Dunhill Links earlier this month. So he's bursting with form and he's got a sniff of the PGA Tour card. I mentioned Bobby Mack. He could finish in the top 10 in the race to Dubai and get a PGA Tour card. This burst of form shot him up there. And he's got some desert form in the book as well. So, yeah, I think Matthew Pavon is more than fair at 33s.
Yeah, that can happen, can't it? You get the first win and then it's just like a button that's been pressed and you just have belief that you can do it again.
You're absolutely right. I mean, how hard is it to swing a golf club with a monkey on your back? It's technically very difficult. And now the monkey's gone. He's freed him right up and away he's gone.
Pavon is on the Steve Palmer portfolio for this week. Who's up next, Steve?
Valko Niinimaa.
Oh, it's been a while. It's been a while.
It's been a while. 60 to 1.
I love this guy.
Why would you give up on Valko Niinimaa? He's 23 years of age, Jack. Oh, I didn't give up on you when you were 23. I'm not giving up on Valko Niinimaa when he's 23. Yeah, this is the moment. This could be the moment that he makes a DP World Tour breakthrough. Look at the Qatar Masters Honours Board. You know, the South Africans love this event. You know, you've got Darren Fickart, Ernie Els, Latif Goolhan, Brandon Grace, Justin Harding. They're all Doha champions. Mm-hmm. I think Niinimaa can join them. He, as I say, 23, settling into the world, still improving. He's won on the Challenge Tour, and this year he's shown enough for me to suggest that DP World Tour glory is imminent. At the end of April, he finished second in the Abu Dhabi Challenge, a Challenge Tour event in the Middle East. He was fourth in the ISBS Handa World Invitation in August, and in the Spanish Open last time out, so lively over the weekend. Back-to-back rounds of 66, rocketed up to 17th place. This is his third Doha start, 48th in 2019, 12th last year. I think he's going to contend a healthy price this year.
The concern with Niinimaa, I mean, he was always such fun to watch because he's so long, isn't he? And he's gangly and just great. Yeah. Like the South African Moronk, but I mean, I know Moronk.
Yeah, I know what you're getting at. Very, very tall, long levers.
Yeah, I mean, just
love a long lever.
It's great. It's great to watch. The concern was always he had potential to lever those levers and just be incredibly wild. Is he tightened that up a little bit now?
You're absolutely right. And it often happened in windy conditions. I mean, you don't want to be vacuum Valko in his long levers when the wind's whipping. And you saw him, you know, he's got so much ability, but can be extremely wild. You're absolutely right. We are taking a chance here. And his scorecards are typically... Now, I think the last time I backed him, his scorecard had about a million birdies on it, but then there'd be triple bogey, double bogey. He's attacking, all guns blazing. But the weather this week is ideal. Yeah, it's calm. You know, normally in these desert events, you get windy afternoons. If my reading of these forecasts is correct and the forecasters have done their job properly, we're not going to get any significant wind this week to blow Valko off course. His biggest challenge will be, you know, psychologically, if he's in contention. It'd be a big moment for him. It really stabilised his career to win a DP World Tour event. That's his big challenge. But then you can win events. Have I made you dizzy?
Giddy.
Giddy. Oh, giddy.
I'm dizzy as well. I'll throw that in there.
That's good.
Right. One more to go. I've lost track.
Yes, sir.
One more to go. Okay. Fire away.
Gavin Green, 50 to 1.
It's a throwback this week. Wow, okay.
It's go time, baby. The lights are green. Let's move our vehicle into the fast lane. I'll eat my hat. I'll eat this hat. I'll eat everyone else's hats if Gavin Green goes through his entire career without winning on the DP World Tour. He's too talented not to win on the DP World Tour. He's not won on the DP World Tour. Yeah, exactly. He's shot. You're shot to the core there, aren't you? And rightly so. I mean, we were on him last year for the Portugal Masters, you probably remember. Yep. In that Portugal Masters, he carded a 27 under par total. He's so unlucky to not win that event. He finished runner-up to Jordan Smith, who went bananas, actually had a good week putting and actually had a good week holding himself together mentally. I was gutted Green didn't win there. It looked so good for so long. And 27 under par would have won him, I don't know, every other Portugal Masters possibly. But he was five shots clear of third place. So that's probably where your confusion lies. You probably thought he must have won the Portugal Masters at 27 under par, but he didn't. But he was also runner-up in the 2017 Indian Open. He was third in the 2018 Czech Masters. He was third in the 2020 Saudi International. He was second in the 2022 Czech Masters. Knocking at that door of the winner's enclosure. He's still in his 20s. He'll turn 30 over Christmas. I think it could come in Doha, that he'll finally deliver in Doha. He's played there twice before. 31st in 2019. Fifth last year, the voice is going. He turned up in terrible form last year, Jack. He opened with a 77. People like you would have given up on him. but he outscored everybody in the field over the final three rounds. And everyone in the field was outscored by Gavin Green at Doha last year over the final three rounds. Finished fifth. He's had five top tens this year. He's got a massive chance. So I wasn't being harsh there because you're nicer than the average person. You wouldn't have given up on him.
No, absolutely. I remember following Gavin Green around Celtic Manor one year, and I just watched him. And, well, I assumed he'd won at that point. You know, I obviously got my facts wrong, but a really impressive. To be fair, Steve, I'm just looking down that even at massive prices this week, there's a serious talent list on the DP World Tour. Now, I don't think this tour gets the respect it deserves.
Yeah. I mean, you might look at this event because there's no big guns there. You can see the panic in the bookmakers' eyes. Yeah, who do we make favorite? And they've just gone 20-1 everyone. Mm. But you haven't got any big guns. They're saving themselves for Ned Bank and DP World Tour. But you're absolutely right. There's some very handy operators deep in the list here, and hopefully R5 will be the handiest of all.
That would be good. I mean, thank goodness we haven't got another tournament to preview, because I think producer Will's already going, oh, goodness sake, this is a long episode. Just run through the five for this week again, so it's all good. Jot them down on their notepads.
Thorbjørn Thunderbear Olsson, Robert Bobby McIntyre, Matthew Matty Pavon, Valko Bone Crusher Neighbor, and Gavin Go Time Green.
I thought you were reeling off Live Golf team names then.
Everyone should have a nickname. You're right. Every player should have a nickname, shouldn't they? Why haven't they all got nicknames? I'll be well up for that. Like darts players. Yeah, every golf player should have a nickname. Why have we only just come up with that? Get Keith Pelly on the line. I'll happily sit down. If he gives me £100, I'll give him a great nickname for every single player on the DP World Tour.
For 100, that's a long list, Steve.
Won't take me long. Just did five.
Yeah, that's true. That's
Bobby's true. Bobby's not the best nickname ever, but yeah, I'm well up for that.
Okay, well, I'm sure we've got the necessary people watching. What does the rest of the week hold for you, Steve? I mean, the weather here is grim. I mean, the thought of going outside is off the card, so I'm just going to be plonked in front of the television and watching golf, I think. I mean, that's probably every week for you, isn't it?
I am contractually obliged to leave the house today, and I will be leaving the house today. Unfortunately, I'll have to go to Yeovil, which is not the nicest place to have to go. But Yeovil v Weymouth tonight in the biggest football derby there is.
Are you nervy or like what? I mean, I hate derby matches.
You know. Yeah. Is Ipswich your big one? Is it Ipswich?
It's even more. I mean, Norwich aren't doing great. Sorry, this isn't the football. Norwich aren't doing great. Ipswich are doing really well, which just compounds the misery, I always think. It's never nice seeing your rivals do well.
No, absolutely right. And Yeovil are top of the league. We're travelling to Yeovil. But we're unbeaten in five league games. Yeah, we're 4-1 to win tonight, which shows you what we're up against. But it'd be lovely. I would love it if we brought them down a bit. I would love it if we went there and won that. I'm going to Yeovil. I'm going to Yeovil. I'm pumped to the nines, to be honest with you.
Wow. Stay safe. Don't do anything you shouldn't do. There we go. Sweet spot for this week wrapped up. We've got what have we got to preview next week, Steve? It's a strange time in this golf calendar at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, no PGA Tour event this week. I guess they give them a bit of time to get back from Japan. That might be in their thinking. But next week, we haven't got a DP World Tour event, and we're replacing it with a PGA Tour event, which is the Worldwide Technologies Championship at Mayakoba, the snappiest title for a golf tournament ever. We will focus on Mexico next week. We'll focus on Qatar this week. Yeah,
I hope you can manage to get that hat off. It looks like it's kind of sculpted around your head at this point. So best of luck with that. Thanks to everyone at home for tuning in. Please remember to gamble responsibly if you're backing Steve's selections. I hope you enjoyed the show. We'll see you all again next week for another edition of The Sweet Spot. Bye-bye.